हरिओम। वेरी ऑस्पिशियस डे फॉर अस स्टार्टिंग फर्स्ट चैप्टर ऑफ दिस ब्यूटिफुल स्क्रिप्चरल टेक्स्ट गिवन बाय द लॉर्ड हिमसेल्फ। इट्स रियली अ ब्लेसिंग फॉर अस दैट वी आर एबल टू स्टडी दिस टुगेदर। वी हैव डन सम इंट्रोडक्शन टू द भगवद गीता, बट जस्ट अ लिटिल मोर इंट्रोडक्शन आई थॉट वुड बी रिक्वायर्ड। First of all, the story of the Mahabharata. Does everybody know the story, or does anybody need a little short? Okay, I'll just tell it in brief. Most of the people know the story, but this story is the Mahabharata is the great conflict between the two families. Actually, there was one family. There were two brothers, Pandu and Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra had 100 sons because he was blind, and when he married his wife Gandhari, also decided to become blind. And so out of those blind union, 100 sons were born who were evil, who were more dishonest. And Pandu had two wives, and his sons were Pandavas who were honest, sincere. And so there was throughout from the beginning of the Mahabharata, the evil brothers who were always jealous of their cousins. Even though their cousins were good, they were always prosperous, they were doing well, they were liked. And so the Duryodhana, who was the eldest of the Kaurava brothers, always was jealous, and he tried all different tricks to kill them. He tried to poison them, he tried to burn them, and tried every which way to get rid of the Pandavas. But all these plans failed, because Lord Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas and always helped them. So ultimately, the kingdom was to be divided equally between the Pandavas and the Kauravas, because Dhritarashtra was blind and was getting old. And the Pandava kingdom prospered because they were honest, hardworking, sincere. And while, of course, even the evil is ruling, then the whole country goes down. And so the Kauravas were jealous of the Pandavas' success. And so Duryodhana invited Yudhishthira, who was the oldest of the Pandava, to a gambling duel. And in those days, if somebody invited you to gambling, you had to go there. It was a matter of honor, like a duel. And so Yudhishthira goes, and Duryodhana uses his uncle Shakuni, who is very dishonest, crooked, and he cheats. And they win in the dice, and the Pandavas lose completely, and as a condition of their loss, they have to go for, I'll shorten it, there was a lot of other episodes, but they had to go for 12 years to the forest, and then 1 year stay in hiding. So 13 years they had to spend in misery, and so they did that. They fulfilled the condition, 12 years in the forest, 1 year in hiding. They could not be found, and when they come back to claim their kingdom, which was theirs, the Duryodhana, he was so used to now having all this power, he said, you're not going to get anything. So Yudhishthira says, okay, give me 5 villages. I don't want the kingdom. 1 village for each brother. He says, you can't have that either. How about 5 houses for us? Just 5 for the 5 brothers. He said, I'm not even going to give you land enough to fit on the tip of a needle. So they tried all peaceful methods, and when nothing happened, then they were forced to fight. And that's what Duryodhana said, if you want your kingdom, you'll have to fight for it. And so that's why the war broke out. And so that is in short the story of the Mahabharata, the outline or the background of why the Bhagavad Gita was told. And then the first chapter is the one that connects the Mahabharata story to the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is 18 chapters. And if it were just to appear in the middle of the Mahabharata, suddenly Krishna is teaching, it wouldn't make sense. So the first chapter, which we are going to start today, will connect the story with the message, why this message had to be given. So just a brief introduction. We have done some introduction, and we have also done the Gita Dhyanam, which is the invocation to Mother Gita, to Ved Vyas ji, who was the author of the Mahabharata, and to Lord Krishna, who is the one who delivered this message. But then there is a little bit of introduction, which is also in Gurudev's commentary. If anybody does not have these books, I would recommend you get this set, because this is what we follow and will help you a lot in your in following this text. It's the same one, the red one. This one is just has the word-to-word translation, but the commentary is the same. So what Gurudev says is that we have two aspects to our mind, what he calls as the subjective and the objective mind. Is everybody able to read both the boards? Okay. So there is a subjective mind and the objective mind. Now, what is the subjective mind and what is the objective mind? Here in the BMI chart, the mind and the intellect, the mind is the seat of emotions where we feel the emotions. The intellect is the discriminating or the deciding factor. And the body is where we perceive the objects, this human body that we have. And vasanas are our tendencies. And Om represents God's presence. So the M, which is the mind, which feels the emotions, is said to be the objective mind. What does it mean by objective? It gets information from the world. It deals with the world. So with the eyes I can see, with my ears I can hear, nose I can smell, tongue I can taste, the skin I can touch. So the whatever I see, hear, smell, taste and touch comes in through the sense organs to the objective mind. Now, what does the objective mind do? The objective mind is like the clerk. Like there is a clerk in an office. The clerk gets all the letters, gets all the information, or the nowadays, of course, nobody sends letters, gets emails. But whatever information the clerk gets, it does not, it's not supposed to take decisions on his own. What he has to do is present it to the manager or the boss, and then the manager, after having, since the manager has more knowledge, more wisdom, and knows what's happening in the company, can make the decisions how the firm should work, how the office should work. But suppose the clerk starts taking decisions on his own, not consulting the manager, then the decisions may be right or the decisions may be wrong. So similarly, our objective mind gets information from the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue, and then it's supposed to present the information to the intellect. The intellect is the deciding factor, the nishchayatmak buddhi, and the mind is called the samshayatmak buddhi, or the doubting faculty. So the deciding factor called the intellect then takes a decision based on previous knowledge, based on previous information, based on the scriptures, based on what I have learned in my school, college, what I have learned from my parents. And then the decision is made to the hands, maybe to pick up something, or if there is something danger, for the feet to run away, or if something needs to be said, the speech. So the hands, feet, speech, the excretory and the genital organs are the organs of action, and they act upon the instructions of the intellect. Now, two things can happen. One is the mind decides not to consult the intellect. And the mind said, I'm just going to do what I want. It's like the clerk. A lot of times the decision will be wrong because it's just, I feel like doing it, so I'll do it. It doesn't matter what the intellect says, doesn't matter what is right, doesn't matter what is good, I'll just do it. Or the other thing could happen is the mind gives the information to the intellect. The intellect says, do it. The mind says, I won't. It's like the officer gives the instructions to the clerk and says, you know, send out this letter, tell this wing of the company. He says, we don't need, I'll decide. And a lot of times that's what happens to us because our mind gets information from the world and the intellect knows what is right, or intellect is supposed to. But what happens? Why is there a disconnect between the mind and the intellect? Even though the intellect knows what is right, even though the intellect has all the information from the scriptures, from the guru, so they say there is a layer of ego. There is a layer of selfish tendencies or selfish desires. So between the mind and the intellect, when a layer of selfish desires comes, then what it does, it blocks the function of the intellect, and the intellect gets as if were covered with a layer of dirt, with a layer of ignorance, you may call it. And why? Because of my selfish desires, I no longer think and I do what is selfish. Secondly, when the more and more we do selfish actions based on my egoistic desires, the more the vasanas increase. So the vasanas are my selfish tendencies, which I have accumulated not only in this lifetime, but in multiple lifetimes. We have accumulated these, and we are all born with certain vasanas. And the more we live an egoistic life, selfish life, the more we strengthen our vasanas. The more the vasanas get strengthened, the more my actions become selfish. The more my actions become selfish, more vasanas. It's a vicious cycle. And as the vasanas become stronger, they act like a barrier between me and the Lord. Lord is present in us, us as Om, as Buddha, as Krishna, as Jesus, is Lord's presence, but we are not able to experience the Lord's presence because of these selfish vasanas and the egoistic tendencies. So that is what we have illustrated in the second line. So what is the technique to reduce the vasanas? Gurudev tells us very beautifully, do actions unselfishly. Without I and my, without doership, actions dedicated to the Lord. The Lord is doing everything. I am a humble instrument. Whatever I have, the body, the mind, the intellect is all His gift to me. And what I do with what I have is my gift to the Lord. So doing all actions dedicated to the Lord without doership. Prakriti, here there is a chair. Come. No, there is a chair here. Doing all actions dedicated to the Lord without I and my, without doership, is called Karma Yoga, which we will be studying in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So as I do unselfish actions, slowly my ego gets reduced, my vasanas get reduced, and such an individual who is practically devoid of vasanas, we call a saint. Because a saint has no I or my, has no ego, has no selfishness. His or her life is all dedicated to the Lord, to the service of the people, and those are the ones we call as Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, Jesus, Buddha, those great prophets, Mirabai, Narsi Mehta. So these are the saints who had totally identified with the Lord, become one with the Lord, had become vasana free, and in their living life itself, they were God incarnate. God was walking through them. So that is the essence of this, this introduction. And then Arjuna suffered from what we call as Arjuna disease, which is in the first chapter. That's why the first chapter is called Arjun Vishad Yoga. Vishad means sorrow. Yoga means the science. So they say, how can sorrow be a yoga? We understand karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga. But Arjun Vishad Yoga, Arjuna's sorrow is also a yoga. It doesn't. So what they tell us that when Arjuna suffered, what did he do? He went to the Lord himself. He went to the Lord and said, Lord, I don't know what to do. You please guide me. Shishyasteham shadhi mam tvam prapanna. I have bowed down to you. I have prostrated to you. I have surrendered to you. And you guide me. So the words of wisdom that the Lord gave him from the second chapter on became the entire Bhagavad Gita. So the first chapter is called Yoga because when we are suffering and we go to the right teacher, then that knowledge becomes blessing. So even that suffering becomes blessing. So Arjuna's sorrow became a blessing for all the rest of us because we are studying that. That's why they say, Sarva Upanishado Gao Dogda Gopala Nandana. Upanishads are the cows and Krishna is the cowherd who gave this milk of the Upanishads to Arjuna, and we are all enjoying that. So that's why the first chapter is called the Arjuna disease, and then second to 18th chapter is the Krishna cure. How did Krishna cure this disease? You have a question? No. So the last point is, who listens to the Bhagavad Gita? Who was the one that heard the Bhagavad Gita? So they said three people were the primary recipients of this knowledge. As you all know, the war was about to break out and Dhritarashtra was blind and he could not obviously see the war, or In those days, they didn't have all the facilities for the blind people. So Ved Vyas ji, who is the author of the Mahabharata, offered Dhritarashtra. He said, I can give you Divya Drishti for the temporary duration of the war, which of course lasted 18 days. You will have a divine vision where you will be sitting in your palace. You will be able to see what is happening in the battle of Kurukshetra several miles away. So that vision I can give you. Now, Dhritarashtra had been blind since birth. And he said, I have never seen my 100 children. And I know that in this war, my sons are on the wrong side. And Krishna is on the side of Pandavas. Even though the Kaurava army was much larger, 11 divisions versus 7, Akshohini they called them, 11 Akshohini versus 7. And had greater warriors, but he was afraid that his children might not survive. And he said, I do not want to see my children dying. I can't see that. So then he says, give this vision to Sanjaya. Sanjaya was his minister, was a very wise person, very learned, and very evolved soul. And he was working as the main helper for Dhritarashtra. So Ved Vyasji gives him that vision. So Sanjay is sitting in the palace. It's like TV, you know, where he could actually see what was happening several miles away. But unlike TV, this was even better. Not only Sanjay could see what was happening in the battle, but he could know what is in the minds of the participants. So he could even go into the minds of them and see what they are thinking. So that's why this vision was very evolved. So who listened to the Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna, of course, directly heard from the Lord. Sanjaya, even though sitting here, he could hear what was going on. And Dhritarashtra was simultaneously listening. So three people heard the Bhagavad Gita originally. Then, of course, all the rest of us got it secondhand. So what do these three represent? So they say Sanjaya represents Sattva. As we know, the Bhagavad Gita talks about three gunas under which we all function. Sattva is purity, knowledge. Rajas is activity. And tamas is laziness or ignorance. And so we function under these three gunas at all times. Like when I am listening to spiritual discourse or in the presence of Swamiji's or in the temple, I am in the sattvic mood. I am in a very pure mood. And then when I go out, I'm working in the world trying to earn. Then I'm in rajasic mood. And at night, when I'm ready to sleep, I get into a tamasic mood and I'm ready to sleep. But my predominant tendency is what determines who I am. Am I predominantly a sattvic individual? Am I pure? Am I loving? Am I compassionate? Am I knowledgeable? Or am I rajasic, where I am passionate and angry and wanting to acquire more and possess and fight and accomplish? To a certain extent, that is good, but when rajas is not accompanied by sattva, not accompanied by purity, you can compete in the world, but the competition has to be with pure knowledge. When that is not there, then that rajas becomes dangerous to the world, and that's what happens when these, you know, rulers and dictators become so powerful where they really don't care what is happening to anybody else. So that is rajas, and tamas is the lowest one. And these are the people who are like drug addicts and, you know, people who are criminals who are living in the lowest level of society. And that is what their life is. And the sattvic people are, of course, the teachers and the gurus and the wise people. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Sanjay represents Sattva because he was a very evolved soul. It is said he was beyond likes and dislikes. He was a very, very evolved individual. And so when he was listening, that's why in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I remember every word. In fact, he remembered every word throughout. And I'll talk about that a little while later. And he said, my mind is just filled with this wisdom and my body is just, you know, my Rom Harshanam, my hair are standing on head and I'm so happy. So he was totally in that sattvic mood when he was listening and when he was repeating. Arjuna, on the other hand, was in a rajasic mood because he was ready to fight. because his whole life he had been trained to be a warrior. He had, you know, done a lot of tapas, had a lot of weapons. And now there was a time to fight a just war. So he had rajas, but he had rajas mixed with sattva. It was not only pure selfishness. It was the idea that doing the right thing. And Dhritarashtra, of course, was tamas, was blind, not only physically blind, but mentally blind. He heard the Bhagavad Gita, didn't have an inch of effect on him. Nothing. He didn't change at all. He remained as ignorant as he was, as selfish as he was. So for each one of us, we have to decide that, am I more sattvic, rajasic or tamasic? So if we are Dhritarashtra, we have to become like Arjuna. That means if I am lazy, I have to become active and work. And if I am rajasic, then I have to become like Sanjay. I have to become more sattvic, become more pure, more get better knowledge, apply this knowledge in my life. And ultimately, the highest student of the Gita is who becomes like Lord Krishna himself. That's why they say the first reading of the Bhagavad Gita should be done like Arjuna. That Bhagavan is talking to me. The Lord is talking to me, not to some... See, a lot of people watch the Bhagavad Gita like a movie. You know, you watch a movie, okay, there is a hero, there is a heroine, and then there is the villain, and then and there is a conflict, and the hero wins, and everybody claps, and we leave. And a lot of people watch it like that. They say, Bhagavad Gita, beautiful text. What advice Arjuna has got from Krishna, how he learned, beautiful. There's no use. Then you are watching it like a movie. Krishna is teaching Arjuna. Then I'm like the horse. The horse heard the whole 18 chapters. Did anything change in the horse? No. So if I listen to the Bhagavad Gita like that and don't change, then I'm not any better than the horse. The idea is that Bhagavan is talking to me, Arjuna. The second time you read the Bhagavad Gita, you should say, I am Krishna and I'm talking to my lower mind. So the Lord in me is talking to my lower mind. So that is how the Bhagavad Gita should be. You should evolve from lowest to the highest, where the Lord in me is talking to my lower mind. So my higher prakriti is talking to my lower prakriti. So that is the way the Bhagavad Gita should be studied. I'll do one more verse, the first verse, and then we'll leave some time for questions and then move on. Let's start. Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha.
Om
Atha Prathamo Dhyayaha. Arjun Vishad Yogaha. Dhritarashtra Uvacha. Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre. Samaveta Yuyutsavaha. Mama Kaf Pandavas Chaiva.
Mama Kaf Pandavas Chaiva.
Kim Akurvata Sanjaya.
Kim Akurvata Sanjaya.
So Dhritarashtra Uvacha. I'll translate and then we'll spend a little time speaking about the verse. So Dhritarashtra spoke. Dhritarashtra said. Dhritarashtra was the king, the blind king, the head of the Kauravas, who was the king at that time. But he was going to then give over his kingdom to whoever won the battle. So what did Dhritarashtra say? Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre. Kurukshetra was the battlefield, which is in UP, not too far from Delhi. And Kurukshetra is the name of that place. And it was called a Dharma Kshetra. Why Dharma Kshetra? Because a lot of rituals and prayers to the Lord had been done in those areas. In that area, a lot of yagnas had been done. And that same place was now going to be a battlefield. And Dhritarashtra felt that being a Dharma Kshetra, maybe this may have a little effect on my children. Maybe they may become good with rituals. Or what he was hoping, that it has an effect on the Pandavas. And they feel good about it and maybe they might give up the battle. So he says, Dharma Kshetre, Kurukshetre. In Kurukshetra, this is the seventh case. Samaveta Yuyutsavaha. Samaveta means assembled who? Yuyutsavaha. Those who are ready to fight. So here the two armies were not there to perform a ritual or have a festival. They were here to fight. And who are they? So Dhritarashtra says, Mama ka Pandavas chaiva. So mine. So mine, my 100 sons and Pandava and the 5 sons of Pandu. Kim akurvat Sanjaya. What did they do? That was my question. Akurvat. That's the past tense. Oh Sanjaya, what did they do? So the first thing that actually it didn't strike me. I have been studying Bhagavad Gita for so many years. Why was it spoken in the past tense? Why was it in the past tense? And Swamiji in his commentary explains it very beautifully. He said, normally, see, if you are listening to a commentary, like, okay, you're watching a cricket match or a baseball match, what does the commentator say? The bowler comes, he bowls the ball, and the batsman hits it, and it goes over the fence for a 6. Or he hits it and he runs for 2 runs. He doesn't speak in the past tense. He doesn't say the bowler bowled the ball and the batsman. He's telling the commentary in the present tense. But here, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Sanjay says, the Bhagavan uvach, Sanjay uvach, Arjuna uvach, and then everything in the past tense. So the thing is that the commentary that Sanjay was giving to Dhritarashtra started on the 10th day. For the first 9 days, Sanjay was quiet. He was watching and not telling anything. But on the 10th day, Bhishma, who was the leader of the Kauravas, the best warrior, fell. There's a long story of Bhishma's falling. I won't do that, otherwise we won't ever finish. But if we have time, maybe we can tell that story about how he fell. So he was not only a great soldier, but a very divine individual. In fact, they say the whole Mahabharata, he's probably the most evolved soul, of course, next to Lord Krishna himself. Very, very evolved, very spiritual person, and he fell. And Sanjay's voice becomes sad and becomes a little down. So Dhritarashtra says, even though he was blind, you know, blind people are very perceptive. He said, something is wrong. You're not telling me. What's wrong? Tell me that. And that time that Sanjay says, you know, Bhishma has fallen. He says, Bhishma has fallen? What happened all the 10 days? So then Sanjay starts from the first day, but he remembers everything word by word. Whatever Bhagavan has spoken, all the 700 verses. See, that was his sattva and that was his divine vision. So he says, Dhritarashtra uvacha. So it starts with Dhritarashtra said. What did he say? Dharma kshetre kuru kshetre. Now the word dharma is here, and it is always said in our scriptures that the first word of any scripture should be God's name. And they say you cannot start a scripture without God's name, you know. So they say, well, where is God's name here? So they said, wait a minute, didn't we do the 9 verses of the, you know, Gita Dhyanam? That is all homage to Lord Krishna and to Ved Vyasji. So that is our Mangal Vacha. That is our auspicious beginning. He said, no. That was told by Madhusudan Saraswati much later, you know, few hundred years ago. Gita was written several thousand years ago. We don't consider that. He says, okay, Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha, we chanted today. Om is God's name. Atha is also, all the scriptures start with Atha, you know, Atha to Brahma Jignyasa. So Om and Atha are very auspicious. No. We don't count that because that is also added. You tell us in the Bhagavad Gita, where is God's name? So they say Dharma. Dharma is God's name. Those of you who know Vishnu Sahasranama, Dharmo Dharma Viduttamaha. So one of God's name is Dharma. What is dharma? Dharma is not only righteousness, but dharma is the essential being, the essential nature of who I am, that divinity within me. So here it says, dharma kshetre kuru kshetre. So these two words have a lot of meaning. As we said, dharma is what we should have, what we should practice. And in life, there are 4 goals what we call as purushartha, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So dharma means righteousness. Dharma has many meanings, but here dharma means righteousness. Artha means earning wealth. Kama means desire. Come on in. So artha is accumulating wealth and kama is sense pleasures, sense desires. Those are called kama or sense pleasures. So in life, that is our goal, earning money or enjoying sense pleasures. Most people feel that is what I am here for, to earn money and to enjoy sense pleasures. Talking about earning, there was this man who wanted to win the lottery because his business was in big trouble. So he pleads to God, "Oh God, oh God, please let me win the lottery. If I don't win the lottery this week, my business is going to go bankrupt." Prays every day. And Friday, the lottery result comes. He hasn't won and he's so sad. The next week, "God, let me win the lottery this week. If I don't win the lottery, I'll lose my house." Every day he prays. Friday, he looks at the paper. He hasn't won the lottery. Whole next week, "Lord, let me pray. If I don't win the lottery this week, I'll lose my car and I won't have any money to feed my children." Result comes, he hasn't won the lottery. He's so sad. He has lost his house, his car, his business. He has no money. He says, "Lord, I have been praying to you every day, going to the temple, and you still haven't given me anything." Suddenly the clouds part, light comes, and a sound comes from the sky. You know, the Lord, he says, "Son, meet me halfway. At least buy a lottery ticket." So that is what we do. You know, we want everything from the Lord, but we don't put any effort. They say, "God, please have your grace on me." Lord's grace falls on those who help themselves. That's why they say God helps those who help themselves. If you sit passively and wait for some miracle to happen, so that's why they say put your effort and then Lord's grace will come. So artha is wealth and kama is sense pleasures. They should be done with dharma. That's why dharma is first. Dharma means righteousness. So if I earn money, it should be the right way. I'm enjoying sense pleasures. It should be done in the right limit, with the right way, not dishonestly. And then the ultimate goal of life is moksha. What is moksha? Moksha is defined as liberation. So what do we need to be liberated from? They say, "I'm living in a free country. I'm living in the United States. I can criticize the president. I can write a letter to the editor. I can vote for who I want. I can buy a house where I want. I'm free." Yes, I am free in the worldly sense, but am I free of my vasanas? Am I free of my desires? Am I free of my attachments? These are the things that hold me down. So when they say liberation, it is liberation from the bondages of the world and becoming one with God. So it's not a state. It is a state of mind. It's not a place to be. You could be living in a dictatorship. You could be living in the worst of circumstances. But if you are one with God, then you are free, because not only you are one with God, you are one with everybody. So true liberation is identifying with the higher, becoming one with God. And then such a person, when they work in the world, then they are free of attachments. They are free of selfishness. And their life becomes a life of service, a life of saintliness. So dharma should be controlling my artha and kama, and my goal should be moksha. So throughout the Bhagavad Gita, these two things are given. What is dharma? What is right thing I should do? And how can I attain moksha? So these two things are taught simultaneously by the Lord. On the one hand, he's telling us what we should do. And the other hand, what should be our ultimate goal. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita is a complete text of living. How to live in this world and how to evolve out of this world, you know, become one with that. So that is the essence of this word dharma. Now he says dharma kshetre kuru kshetre. So they say our body is also like a dharma kshetra. Dharma means right, Kshetra means place. So a place of right action. That means my body I should make into a Dharma Kshetra. I should do the right thing. I should live an honest life, life of service, life of helping. If I don't, then my body will become a Kuru Kshetra, will become a zone of conflict. Because my mind will be fighting with my intellect, then my body will get all kinds of diseases, all kinds of illness. Not only that, but when I am sick, either physically or mentally, it spreads to my whole family. So ultimately, the whole family gets contaminated. So they say if your body is not a Dharma Kshetra, it becomes a Kuru Kshetra and it becomes a zone of conflict. So that's why he says, Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveta Yuyutsavaha. They have assembled here to fight. Who? Mine, Mamaka and Pandava. So here, we see Dhritarashtra already having the selfishness, the ego. As we said, the mind and intellect, they do not work together when the selfishness or ego is there. So he says, my children and Pandava's children, even though they were his brother's children, he should say our family. It is unfortunate that within our family, cousins are fighting. He should not have allowed that. If Dhritarashtra had wanted, he could have put a stop to the war. But he was so influenced by his oldest son, Duryodhana, who kept telling him, you know, we are strong, we will win. Why do we need to give anything to these people and all that? So he was blinded. And so that's why he had this ego, mine and others. And that's how we are in this world too. This is mine and this is somebody else's. Not only is somebody else's, how can I also get it? So somebody else's should also become mine. And same thing when it comes to children. These are my children and these are the neighbor's children. This is my family. This is somebody else's family. So that is the ego speaking in us. So that's what he says. Mamaka Pandava Shaiva. And who? The Pandava sons and my children. What did they do? Kim Akurvat Sanjaya. So this is the only verse that Dhritarashtra, the blind king, speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. All the other verses are spoken by Sanjaya, where he is repeating either what the Lord spoke or what Arjuna spoke. So any questions or comments either on the introduction or on the first verse? Yes. Sure.
Pandavas and Kauravas, they are the one family. So, like
Pandu
was the smaller and the Dhritarashtra was the elder one.
Right.
If he was blind, so they've decided to give the Gadi to Pandu. But sir, then he was blind, not his children were not blind. Then giving the Rajgadi to his they decide to Yuvraj, means whom will be
right.
The Gadi. Then why they didn't consider the family, old family? Because Duryodhana was the elder one.
Duryodhana was elder on the Kaurava side, but Yudhishthira was older than him. Yudhishthira was the oldest.
So then why didn't they decide like that, we'll give this to Duryodhana?
No, they gave half and half. They were being fair. What happened to Pandu? Pandu was the ruler, but then Pandu got sick and he committed some sin. So he had to go to the forest and give up his kingdom. So the blind Dhritarashtra was ruling. But then when he was now too old, it was to be decided. Yudhishthira was the oldest of if you count as in the family. But they said, let's be fair, give half to the Pandavas and half to the Kauravas. So it was divided equally. But that's where the conflict started. Yes. Because the Kauravas were jealous, as we said in the beginning, the Pandavas were more successful, their kingdom was doing better, was more prosperous, people were happier. And obviously, if the ruler is corrupt, nobody is going to be happy. People were miserable. So they were jealous of, so they wanted to take over. Like, what is mine and what is theirs, I must have that too. So that was... Yes.
Also a more able body. Yudhishthira was a more able
person. Yes. Right. Yeah, he was called Dharma Raja. His name was Dharma Raja. He was the embodiment of Dharma. was very honest, very sincere, truthful. Yes, thank you. Yeah, one more question.
You said that after 10 days, he said that as a past tense. The right. Remaining 8 days, totally it is 18 days.
It remained in the past because then it was moving ahead. So the whole 18 days were told in the past tense. The entire Bhagavad Gita is told in the past tense. Did you have a question?
Yes. You mentioned that in scriptures you got the name of God is mentioned.
It's the first word.
It was the first word on all scriptures.
It should be. It's supposed to be.
Okay. So not all of them have that.
They're supposed to. Actually, if you look at any famous work, it always starts with Mangalacharan. Like I'm reading Aparoksha Anubhuti, it's an invocation to Sri Hari Paramanandam Upadeshtaram Ishwaram. So he, Shankaracharya, invokes Vishnu and Lakshmi. So every famous work of every scripture always has a Mangalacharan. Same thing here, we have the whole Gita Dhyanam, the 9 verses which are invocation to the Lord and then the first verse. So yeah, always it is supposed to. In fact, not only spiritual, any work you start, you should ask for the Lord's blessing. So when you leave the house in the morning, just bow down to the Lord. You have a statue or a puja room or somewhere and say, Lord, please be with me all day today. When you make a new house or a new building or a new business or a new job or your son is going for an exam, one should always pray to the Lord. So every activity should start with the Lord's name. That's why in Hindus, we always do what we call as a yagna. When we are starting a new house, we'll do a yagna ceremony. Even when we started the construction of the Chinmaya Mission, those of you who were here, we had a very beautiful yagna there. Swami Tejomaya Nandaji was here. And some of the people here remember that. So that is the idea. Any activity you start, remember the Lord first. It purifies your mind and then the Lord is with me. That is the idea. Do you have a question?
You said the entire Bhagavad Gita was told in the past tense.
Yes.
But in the 10th day, he started giving the commentary of the first 10 days.
Yeah, but then as it happened, but then it remained in the past tense. He didn't change it. That's how, the whole 18 days.
Wasn't the Gita spoken on the first, before the war started?
Yeah, before the war started.
Gita was complete by then.
Yeah, but it was still spoken. But he's telling the Bhagavad Gita as Bhagavan is speaking. But it remained in the past tense, 10th day. Maybe by the time he caught up, Bhagavan had already done 11th and 12th day. And so he was always one day behind.
What I'm talking about is by that time, 18th day, all his sons were killed.
Yes.
He didn't know. He was the 10 days later he got to.
No, he didn't know. Yeah, he didn't know. Yeah, he didn't know. He came to know as it went along, yes. The whole Mahabharata war was described by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. But he remembered all the 700 verses. He repeated them verbatim without any mistake. Yeah. Did you have a question?
No.
No. Okay. Yes, Steph.
About the chart over there, you put a great deal of emphasis on the ego. The ego decides whether or not it's going to follow the mind and the emotions or the intellect.
Yes.
And yet there is no E up there on the chart. And it seemed to me to be absolutely crucial that it be there.
Yeah.
And I wonder why it's not.
No, that is the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. That is the ego.
Ah.
That I am the perceiver, I am the feeler, I am the thinker. So with the body, I perceive the objects, I feel the emotions, I think. So the perceiver, feeler, and thinker is the ego. That's how this chart is interpreted by Gurudev.
Oh, well, I thought the ego was the decider, actually.
No. No, ego
what
is the one
decider,
that
then, between the M and the I?
The intellect should be the decider, but when the intellect does not listen to when the mind does not listen to the intellect and decides on its own, it is under the influence of the ego. The ego is I and me and mine.
Got it.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
How we say that happiness is not in a materialistic world.
Right.
You can find within yourself. But sometimes when we feel I'll be happy if I get this. Mm-hmm. But how can you agree with that thing? I will be happy to
desire after getting that. You know, for example, let's say somebody has a ordinary car and he wants the good car. Like he thinks like he will be happy once he gets Mercedes, BMW.
Right.
But how can he be agree? Like then we can say like, oh no, stay happy whatever you have. It's happiness is not in like getting better than what you have. But how can he be agree with the fact that like until he gets Mercedes to like how can he agree that okay, happiness is not in getting Mercedes?
Right. I think that's a good question.
I mean until you achieve it, until you get it, how can you be agree with it?
The Gurudev said that story, remember, when I wake up in the morning, my mind says I want coffee, 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 coffee. And until you get coffee, your mind is disturbed with that thought of coffee. And then once you get a coffee, so that happiness actually is a silence in your mind of that thought. So if you can eliminate the thought itself, I want BMW or I want, that elimination of thought itself will create the peace in your mind. That's a happiness.
Yeah. I think
so that thought, right. that creates a disturbance in your peaceful lake of mind.
Like enlightening your mind, rather than just thinking,
yeah.
I'll be happy if I get this.
Yeah.
If I get
that. I think I can explain a little more. See, we are all infinite Brahman, Om. That is our highest nature. That is who we are. But not knowing that I am that happiness, because all of us have the source of happiness within, the Lord is within us. And when you quieten your mind and when you, especially in meditation or when you're sitting in a temple or a church, when you are with God's presence, you feel very peaceful. But when you go out in the world, you go away from this peaceful center, and then you are working in the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. So what you feel is that when I get that particular object, I'll be happy. Or when I get that emotion, means when that person loves me or says, I love you, I'll be happy. Or when I get success or, you know, then I'll be happy. So we put our happiness either in objects or people or situations. So either this object will make me happy, this person will make me happy, or this situation, this job. So when I get, as Hansa said very nicely, when I get what I want, temporarily my mind, which was disturbed, coffee, 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 or BMW, BMW, BMW. You know what BMW stands for, right? Big money waste. Most people, Swami Dhirananda's dialogue, big money waste. So when I get that BMW, what happens? Temporarily, my mind becomes quiet. You know, I had this old Chevy. Now I have a BMW. I'm happy. So temporarily, my mind, which was disturbed looking for these objects, gets it. And so I think that the peace came from the BMW, but the peace is my nature. And so when my mind becomes quiet and is no longer agitated or looking for a car, temporarily I'm very happy. The day I first day I drive the car and everybody is jealous and my neighbors, and I honk the horn loudly so everybody knows I have this new car. But what happens after a while? Maybe my car meets with an accident, you know, somebody hits it. Oh, my new BMW, it's only a month old. And now it becomes a source of sorrow. So what happened? Or same thing, a person, I love him so much. And then what, after a few months or years, what happened? Why did I marry? So the happiness we put in either in objects or people or situations. I got this job. I was very happy. And then my boss turned out to be horrible. I'm unhappy. So situations temporarily give us happiness because it quietens the disturbance in our mind. But if we understand that, we are not saying that one should not have a car or not drive or have a nice house or whatever. But do not put the key of your happiness in that object or in that person. Gurudev always says, do not put the key of your happiness in anybody else's pocket. Which means that this person can turn the key and make me happy or make me unhappy. Or this object, I have it, it's fine. But tomorrow, I suddenly lost my car, some problem. It's okay, I can still, you know, I can take a bus or I can take. So the point is that objects or people or situations will come and go. There will be happiness, there will be unhappiness. My body will be healthy one day, unhealthy another day. My mind will be happy one day, unhappy another day. My intellect will be successful one day, failure the other day. But if I put my happiness, then I'm bound to be miserable. If I say I am fine no matter what happens, if I have a BMW, very good. If I don't have it, I'm still fine. If you have that attitude, if this person loves me, I'm fine. If he doesn't love me, I'm still fine. If you have that attitude, then the world cannot affect you. So that is what they're saying, that do not get too much dependent on objects or people for your happiness. It does not mean one should give up everything and become a sannyasi, put on orange clothes and go to the forest. But my happiness does not depend on this situation, because the Lord is within me and happiness is within me. If I am that happiness, that is the.
And also by realizing if BMW will give me happiness, then it will give happiness to everybody. So happiness is not in BMW, not in the object. It is within the mind.
Right.
So if same thing can give happiness to one person and
it should be to everybody.
If happiness was in that object or in that person, then it should be same for everyone.
Right.
It's not. So by realizing that, you will know it's not. So
right.
By educating your mind.
Exactly. Thank you. Like cigarette. Yeah. Cigarette. Now one person, he gets so much joy. Another person says, take it away from me. So the joy is not in the object. The joy is in my attachment. That's what Neeru said.
So we can say, by summarizing all these things, happiness is a state of mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very true.
So
thank you.
Practically, how to deal with it?
Huh?
If practical comes, like all these are thoughts.
Practically, by applying it. That's what Krishna has said. Now the situation comes, I deal with it. If something is, there is a situation, see, how do they show, how do you know that I'm spiritually evolving? How do I know? Things that used to bother me before do not bother me anymore.
Yeah.
If that is, that means you are evolving. If things were bothering you and they are still bothering you, then you have not progressed. So Gita should not only be studied, but should be brought into my life. That's what Gurudev says. It's not that I have gone through Gita, but Gita has gone through me. That is the essence.
Yeah,
yes.
The scale of 1 to 10.
I just wanted to add, like, realization and all that is the ultimate, but to reach there in everyday life, if we do everything in the right way, what is right, eventually we'll see that we'll detach from the materialistic world gradually.
Yes, thank you. That's right. So that's why we said dharma, applying dharma in all our actions will take us to moksha. Thank you, everybody. Yes.
This is just a question. Before we started on the first verse, and you know, said Dhritarashtra Upacha, you had a very short part.
Yeah, Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha. That's not there, but a lot of people say that.
Okay, so it's not there at all.
No. Actually, but generally when we start the Bhagavad Gita, that is the first word. In some of the, it is there in the, in this.
Om Shri,
yeah.
In
the Sanskrit, it is there.
In the beginning, it's not in English.
It's in Sanskrit. Thank you.
Yeah. And then Arjuna Vishada Yoga is said at the end. The heading is said in the end of the first chapter, when Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama. So I always say it in the beginning, so we know that what is the chapter about. Okay, we'll go to the second. And you had another question.
So the Mangala Vacha, that's the Om Hataya.
Om. So the word Om is God's name. Om Shri Krishna Paramatmane Namaha. Om. And here again, Dharma is also, the first word Dharma is also, is Mangalvach.
Okay.